Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Good evening. Welcome back to The Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Tim Dennis. Tim, I think I just lived through Darkness Radio's darkest hour.
I think you did. Dave, if you had a role Bruce in Campbell. Your next movie, would you cast me? Because I really like you.
Bruce Campbell, do you like Krispy Kreme donuts or Dunkin' Donuts? I couldn't help it, man. I geeked out.
Jelly filled or custard filled?
Dude, it's not, but I am still human. That just shows the proof that I bleed green like everyone else.
It's okay. I'll hold you during the break.
Embarrassing. Hey, we got a request here. Christmas Miracles is a book project by New York Times bestselling author Cecil Murphy and young adult author Marley Gibson. They've contracted with St. Martin's Press for a late 2009 release. They seek true stories of miracles that took place at Christmas. These stories have to revolve around that special time of year. They prefer first-person narratives, and it's an excellent opportunity to see your writing in a book with other outstanding authors. You must follow the following guidelines. Deadlines for stories is December 24th, 2008. All entries must be double-spaced, 12-point font, New Times Roman Word document. Stories may run from 900 to 1,300 words. We will not consider longer pieces. We will edit all stories we accept so that they have a unified voice. Your name will be listed with the story, and you'll have a four-line information resume paragraph at the end of the book. Every story must have a positive solution that results from a miracle through events or timing in the Christmas season. Every story must have a positive application. That is, you must tell us what you learned from that miracle or how it changed your life. You may send an original or a reprint. If a reprint, please tell us where it was published and assure us that you own the reprint rights. If they accept your story, you will retain rights. You'll also receive a $50 honorarium and a free copy of the book when it's released in October 2009. They will offer special discounts for contributors who wish to buy additional books, and they'll send that information out to you. For more information, or if you'd like to submit, please visit, and I'll repeat this twice, www.christmasmiraclesbook.com. That's ChristmasMiraclesBook.com, and you can submit for that. It's a great opportunity to have your book published with a major publishing house, so or your story. So get it out there if you're interested in that. We're going to also have that information put up on our website. I'll have Mike, Marley's husband, put that up for you so that way you can follow along. Also, mention, if you go to our website right now at darknessradio.com on the front page, they've posted the live Haunted Wolf Manor tonight, Tim. There's going to be a live ghost hunt at Wolf Manor.
Sweet.
And it's going to be playing right on our front page at darknessradio.com.
So try not to get scared.
That's right. So you can go watch it. And I think the guys from GHI are going to be there. So if you want to be a part of that, you can join in. Tonight, though, we're going to start up with our guests. And this was an interesting bit of information sent to me. Born on February 14th, 1951 in Central Kentucky, our guest Philip Spencer grew up in Anderson County, Kentucky, in the town of Lawrenceburg. Blessed or cursed with the insatiable curiosity for everything, he could never stop seeking answers to the whys of life. As he grew older, his interests were focused on the paranormal and all the mysteries that this area of study had to offer. When Philip would hear a story of anything strange and bizarre, he would immediately gather all the information he could, and then he would go be off onto that place and where the story had actually occurred to try to investigate. He gathered the information and kept it to himself. He was more or less a covert kind of investigator, and over time he met and worked with behind the scenes on many cases from ghosts to UFOs to Bigfoot, and two of his favorite subjects were always Bigfoot and animal mutilations. To Philip, these were hands-on events and were events where the aftermath could often be seen and touched, such as the carcass of dead cows or the footprints of a Bigfoot. Working with his colleague and best-selling author, Philip Gardner, and director and author O.H. Krill, Philip Spencer has authored the book and DVD, The Wild Man of Kentucky, The Mystery of Panther Rock, released on Reality Press and Reality Films, respectively. Many more investigations lay ahead for the Reality Investigative Team and Philip Spencer, but we want to welcome him for the first time to the Darkness on the Edge of Town. Good evening, Mr. Spencer.
Good evening. Thank you very much for having me here.
Oh, we appreciate having you. So you've always kind of been interested in the Bigfoot sightings and animal mutilations overall.
Yes, I've been fairly diverse in the things that have piqued my curiosity, but I've found those two subjects just so fascinating. They are truly just great mysteries.
Well, now, Philip, I don't know if you saw this on, I want to say it was History or Discovery Channel about a year or two ago. I was watching a special on Chupacabra, and during that special, they actually showed cow mutilation stories that they always kind of thought had to do with the Chupacabra itself. The interesting thing to me was one of the police officers was kind of skeptical about the whole cow mutilation thing, so he heard about one of the neighbor's cows had died, so he went out there and he cordoned it off right away. He roped it off, put up video cameras, and he had a police officer sit with it, I think, for like 3 or 4 days. And what they were able to see afterwards is that just nature doing its course, the insects, the way a cow bleeds out, the way an animal kind of rots, by the time it was done, within 2 to 3 days, it looked like it had been vivisected by aliens or by chupacabra. The blowflies and things like that that would eat in such precision, clean, it made it look like laser precision that they were able to eat away the soft tissues of the mouth, the anus, the udders, places like that. The blood would actually be soaked in the ground, and that there are bugs whose job it is to drink and eat blood, so they would tidy it up pretty well. And some of the other damage that these bugs would cause underneath the skin gave them that raised, weird hieroglyph look. Now, are you familiar with that, and what's your take on the investigations that you've looked into with cow mutilations or animal mutilations like that?
I'm very familiar with exactly what you're saying. The natural process of nature as far as what it does to a carcass, just like you say, I'm very familiar with that, but there's another point there. Many, many times where you will find a mutilation case, numerous ones, let's say the farmer goes to bed, gets up in the morning, and finds one of his animals laying dead, and the parts of the body you mentioned are gone. It's not a matter of days. This was, went to bed early, got up early, found the animal. It looks like surgically the sections of the body are gone. And this has been looked at by those who understand the processes that it would take to do this. And that's where I see the mystery. Of course, you know, what killed the animal? Why was it killed? What is the purpose of these events? But like you say, yes, there's a, if you sit and watch, I also watched a video once of a deer carcass, same exact thing you were talking about, and they did the filming of it and watched it as it deteriorated. But there are so many cases where time is not involved. It's a matter of just maybe a few hours,
mm-hmm.
and they find this carcass, and the different parts of the body look like they had been removed with such precision that they can't quite understand what is going on.
Couldn't it also be said, though, that, you know, I mean, they, you know, a lot of these farmers, they have a large grouping of head of cattle, and it always seems that it's not just a cow that's or a head of cattle that's close to the property. It always seems that it's off, it's wandered off, and then they find it, you know, out there. And oh, well, I'm pretty sure, you know, I saw that cow yesterday. I mean, from a distance, how do you know one head of steer from another, or one cow from another, from a distance? And then maybe one just had wandered off for a couple days and they didn't know that it had passed away, and then they stumble upon it when they're out riding, and they could have sworn they saw it yesterday. I mean, do you think that that could be more of a case of
that's
reality?
That's very feasible. That's understandable. I absolutely agree with you. But I will say this. I grew up in a rural area, very familiar with livestock, and I understand what you're saying about how do you know one from the other. And once you get up to a certain number of livestock, I think that you're very right. But I've seen instances where farmers and those that raise cattle and so forth, sometimes it's just amazing as to how they could just set and name their animals.
I got 6 kids, Philip. I can't remember any of their names. I just refer to them as boy and girl.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. But it's very feasible that exactly what you said, but on the other hand, there are reports where it's not like we're dealing with herds of animals. It's just maybe a small farm operation. They go to sleep. They get up. Laying out there is one of their livestock with all of this done to it.
Now, do you know, by doing research, how often is this in locations where crop circles pop up? Are you familiar with that information at all?
In the years that I have studied this and read about it, I'm not going to say that it's not something that occurs together. I don't remember reading where that is something that is related or occurs often.
So I know they usually try to go after saying that, you know, that it's usually in a high UFO related area, or, you know, crop circles seem to pop up around these event areas. I just didn't know if with the research you've done, if you've found any kind of correlation with that as well.
I haven't really seen a correlation actually at all. That doesn't mean that it hasn't occurred. I actually had a case once where a gentleman called me about a bull that he had that had died in a barn. Now, this barn had a lot of stalls and so forth in it. And he asked me if I would come down and look at it and also help him try to get it out of this barn. This was a large animal. But when I got there, the bull had been there for 2 or 3 days, and there was some decomp and so forth. Not a lot, but the eye was gone. There was other areas that also looked like something had cut out. But this eye, that's what I focused on. Oh, the tongue was missing. The eye was just so perfectly gone. It was.
Are you sure it wasn't a mafia hit? It sounds like they, you know, they usually take the eyes and tongues of those that see and talk too much.
Well, if it was, they did a fine job on the eye, I will tell you. And I knew something about this area. I had a couple of reports. This was in Anderson County, Kentucky, near a small lake, of people hearing this buzzing sound that was just very strange. They would hear it at night, and actually it was near this man's farm. And I didn't say anything to him about it. I didn't ask him about it. I just looked at the animal, and then we went through this 2-day process of removing it. But I had spoken to a very famous researcher in this area, and she told me that that has happened before. This strange buzzing sound, people will hear it up in the air, and then they will find an animal dead and mutilated. Nobody's quite sure what the correlation is on that, but I thought that was rather interesting.
No doubt. We have to take our first break. Phil, bear with us. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. We'll be back with more, and our guest, Philip Spencer, the author and of the book and DVD, The Wild Man of Kentucky, The Mystery of Panther Rock. We'll be back with more. Welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Our guest this evening is Philip Spencer. He's the author of the book and DVD, The Wild Man of Kentucky, The Mystery of Panther Rock. Almost sounds like a Hardy Boys book you got going there, Philip.
Well, it's a very interesting read and view on both of them. There's just so much going on in this area of Kentucky. It's just hard to even try to start to figure out why is this all happening in this area.
Well, what is it that got you interested in investigating these kind of creatures and events?
When I was very young, I grew up in a very small rural town in Kentucky, a wide spot in the road, as they call it. And it was just a common way of life. We hunted, we fished, even as young children, you did that so you'd have something to eat. And I left one morning, I left our house out in the rural area, and I was walking back to the back of the property, and I entered a field. It had been disc and doing what is known as drug to flatten it out and everything. And as I approached the middle of this field, I noticed a disturbance in the dirt. And I walked over to it and looked, and it was a single track, a single footprint. And I stood and looked at it. It was very large, and it only had 3 toes. But it was very distinct. There was no doubt that this was a track in this field. There was only one of them. There was nothing anywhere around. I remember I actually backed away from it and looked, trying to figure out what could have done this. And many years later, in research, I found out that others have seen this single track also. I found Pennsylvania. They had even had a picture, a cast of this identical-looking track out in Arkansas. I spoke with a gentleman once that was very familiar with this. And they do associate this with Bigfoot. Although I'm not one to necessarily think maybe that this is the same creature, possibly, but I don't know. But that kind of set the tone for the rest of my life in being so fascinated with all these subjects.
Boy, I would guess. But you saw it of a three-toed variety is what you're saying.
Now, what's that again? I'm sorry.
You saw it as a three-toed variety as the footprint that you saw.
It was three-toed. Or, you know, the standard Bigfoot track, you'll have five toes.
Right.
But this was three. And it was, of course, back at that time, I never thought anything about trying. This is a long time ago, and I never thought about getting a picture, trying to do a cast. I didn't actually say anything to it to anybody about it for some time. I just constantly thought about what could have done that.
No, no doubt. Now, have you ever actually had a sighting of Bigfoot yourself, though?
Yes, I have.
All right, when did that happen?
That was approximately 1970, and my friend and I, we were in an area of Anderson County in Kentucky, near a small town that's on a small river, and this river runs back through a valley. It's just beautiful down in there, and it was real late at night. We used to like to go out at night. We had a spotlight for the car, and we would just ride around and look down in these big valleys back in these wooded places we could get to, and we would see deer and other animals, and that was just something we thought was cool to do. And we had gone down this road, and we were looking back where the river bends and goes back into where the river now feeds the large lake. And I would hold it out over the passenger side window, and I would just sweep down through places and look with the spotlight. And as I did that, down where this river turned to go down and disappear into the woods, we were looking at the deer, and I was sweeping right to left. And all of a sudden, it was one of those situations where I just went, wait a minute, what was that? And so I eased the light back and looked. Now, when we first hit this with the light, there was more or less just a form, but we could see it. And then it turned and looked in our direction, and that's when we both just froze because we got a glimpse of these eyes. Now, I'll explain. We were looking at deer. We understood the land and how it laid out in this area, and we knew immediately that whatever we looked at, whatever we were seeing, was much taller than these deer. I mean a lot. And then we saw it. It looked and then turned and started walking away. And we were just frozen looking, and we watched it. It did not run. It wasn't walking slow, just this steady gait, you know, as it walked down through there. Twice, it looked back over its shoulder at us. And I held the light. We just stayed right on it. There was a fence in this old, that ran down through. It's an old fence, unmaintained. This creature, I'd say 4 foot, maybe 5 foot fence. This creature, when it got to the fence, it never stopped. It didn't break stride. It just basically walked over this fence and disappeared into the darkness.
And now, you say when you saw the face, you saw the eyes. What did the face look like to you?
We couldn't really get a distinct look at the face.
See, that's interesting, because when I was about 10 years old, and I've mentioned this on the show, and I'm sorry for people that have heard this before, but when I was about 10 years old, living in, had gone out to visit my grandparents in Foley, Alabama, and my cousin and I were sitting down by the pond fishing, and we could hear something stomping around, and we used to hear that all the time, but this thing was coming towards us, and at the end of the pond, you could see the bushes start to rustle, and up came this big, almost looked like Chewbacca's hand. Big furry hand, but it was like gray and blackish, and it pulled it down. You could see the top of the seal. And I remember specifically all the wild, crazy gray-black hair, but I don't remember the face. I can't remember if it looked ape-like, if it looked human just covered in hair. I just remember seeing this huge figure push down the top of this bush and look at us, and the two of us kind of jumped up in the air and took off like a bat out of hell. So, you know, it's funny because other people we've spoken to that have had this have also had that same deal where they see this huge, hulking, hairy mass, but the face wasn't so clear to them.
Well, the distance on this at night with a spotlight, I mean, maybe we could have seen a little, but like I say, I don't remember, but the eyes were, they were large, and there was just something different about the way the light did the eyes. That's actually, when I was sweeping, I didn't actually notice this creature, but I had, the eyes had done a shine like, and that, I went, wait a minute, that's, there's something wrong there. You know, that's what my mind was going. And when I eased back, that's when we realized what we were looking at.
Now, did it make any type of noise to you at all?
No. There was no sound. And another thing, the deer that were there, they moved away when it started moving, but they didn't panic. And I remember my friend and I talked about that as we were discussing what we had just seen. And I remember we discussed the deer didn't panic. Now, you can, as you read and research this creature, you hear stories that it's supposed to kill deer and things of that nature. Well, the deer that were in that field were absolutely not afraid of this creature we saw.
So you had a vegetarian growing out there, right?
apparently so. There was no fear in those deer, and that would be a sure sign if a predator was there, I would think.
Well, what do you think, before we go to break here, why do you think there's so much activity in your area?
Oh, goodness. I don't know. This one area that we call the Fraser Land,
mm-hmm.
there is so much going on in this area that I don't know. It's just mystery after mystery. We've got a track that's over 18 inches long. We've got another track that nobody can identify. We've got on my website where people can go and listen to this howl.
Yeah, we're going to play that in a little bit here. When we come back from the commercial break, we'll play this.
Okay.
You know, now I will say this, if this is just sporadically, you know, Tim and I, we make it to Kentucky two or three times a year, and with the Jack Daniel's distillery right there, you know, it very well just could be Tim when he lights up, man, he likes to strip and walk through the woods.
Yes, I do.
And he is big and hairy when he's out there.
Maybe one of those trail cams will catch him.
Exactly.
Put up down there.
Well, Philip, hold tight with us. We're going to take a break here. Sure. We'll come back with more. Our guest is author Philip Spencer. He has a book and a DVD out called The Wild Man of Kentucky, The Mystery of Panther Rock. And that book and DVD is available everywhere?
Yes, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble. You can find it just about you know, any place where you can purchase those items.
People can also go to your website, which is Philip, P-H-I-L-I-P. Spencer, SPENCER.net, and then get more information about you and about the DVD and book there, correct?
Correct. There's lots of information there. There's pictures of this strange unidentifiable track, and the Fraser Howl is on that page.
All right, yeah. Well, when we come back from the break, we'll play the Fraser Howl. We'll get a little bit more of that story. So stay tuned, and thank you for being here with us, Philip. You guys are listening to the best in paranormal talk radio, and we're here with you every Saturday and Sunday night from 9 to midnight. Good evening. Welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Our guest this evening, Philip Spencer, author of the book and DVD, The Wild Man of Kentucky. Let's go to this audio bit that we have here, Philip, and now give us a little bit of background on this audio bit before we play it.
This sound was recorded just a few months ago. It was with a small handheld digital recorder with an external omnidirectional mic. I bought this and left it. The individual that captured this sound is referred to in the book and the DVD as the ex-farmer. This is the man who owns a lot of land in this remote area where all these events are taking place. The thing to about this recording, he was on his porch of his cabin about 11:30 or 12 o'clock at night. This sound was 350 yards away. It was 100 feet down from the top of a hill near the cabin. It was in an area where the foot for the track that's over 18 inches was found. the same area where what is known as the Fraser mud track was found, which no one has identified yet, the same area where there's lights and just all these things are occurring. And he kept this little device handy, and all at once that night as he sat there, he heard it start. One thing that I'd like everybody to keep a close listen to are his dogs. His dogs, these are farm dogs. These are dogs that basically live outside and are rough, tough old dogs, as they are called. And if you'll listen, you'll hear his dogs basically do nothing. And if you'd like, we can talk about that after everybody hears the sound.
Sure. Go ahead, Tim. Now that, I mean, not knowing much, I'm not an outdoorsy guy, but it sounds like wolf howls to me.
Well, I haven't done any acoustic analyzing. I haven't had an expert break it down into frequency range and tonal and octave and all that. But what I did, I took that sound, and I listened to every sound of every wolf, coyote, you name it, and I have tried to compare that sound to all of those. I could not find anything that was similar to the human ear. I had some others do the same thing, and they agreed. What we came down to was possibly a dog, but the distance that this was away, and with this small little recorder, a nice little one, but still not a piece of sophisticated equipment, this sound would have been so loud if someone had been close to it. But the key to the dog theory are his dogs, and I'll explain that. When we went into this area to film the documentary, we encountered his dogs. And the one dog had to be put up. It couldn't stay out because it would have wanted us for lunch. These dogs react to any animal that comes near this place. They immediately react to humans. But if a dog makes a sound on this property, these dogs react. The ex-farmer said that his animals, these two dogs, when this started, he said their heads snapped around and they looked back in the direction of where this was coming from. He said their necks straightened up, their ears perked up, and he said he was expecting them to just go off like they always do. But he said they just sit there. He said he felt like they were puzzled and didn't know what to think. And that's why, if this was a dog, it was a huge dog. And why would his dogs react like this to this sound?
I'm not sure. Now, what can you tell us about this ex-farmer?
He's a retired professional. He asked to remain anonymous. In the book and the DVD, which I honored, he had valid reason. Him and his family have been through such an ordeal. They want no publicity. It took me months to convince him just to talk with his voice and face, mask, about all the things that have happened here. Their children will not camp out anymore with their friends, won't even consider it. They will not go out on the property, and it's a large amount of property and very rough. It's not really farmed. It's just very rough land, which is what he wanted. They will not go out without a weapon. They've just had so many things happen to him, but he is an extremely credible man, and they just want to know what is going on here. Why are all these things happening? This is a man that, years ago witnessed three of his dogs. These were 60 and 70-pound farm dogs in a fight right on his property with some kind of creature that mauled two of them almost to death, and the 70-pound dog was never seen again. And whatever was fighting with his dogs never made a sound. The dogs were fighting and screaming right in a tree line. They were attacking this creature. This creature never made a sound. But it mauled two of the dogs almost to death. The big dog was never seen again. And the ex-farmer is totally convinced it killed that dog and carried it off.
Hmm. Interesting stuff. Well, in the book and in the DVD, you stated that you have some extremely credible eyewitness testimonies. Could you just give us some of the ideas of some of those testimonies that you've had?
Yes. I'll speak about one, and his name is Lynn Hutton. And him and his son had a sighting of Bigfoot many years ago. And this is one of the most credible, just compelling, gripping testimonies anybody's ever gonna see. This man had a sighting of this creature 15 or 20 foot away from him and his son. It absolutely terrified him. But when we were standing there, we were out in the wilderness, and we were filming his story. And all of us that were standing there, it was just mesmerizing to listen to him tell what happened. I absolutely, absolutely believe every word he said. And it's just compelling to sit and listen to this man tell about his encounter with this creature, him and his son.
Well, can you give us a little bit of background on what he did and what he saw?
Okay. Him and his son were walking down a road. It's not really a road, a path, kind of, back into a real remote area. They were scouting an area to hunt.
Okay.
On the right side was a lot of cedar trees. As I'm probably, if you've been to Kentucky, you know a lot of cedars in there.
Right.
And they were walking along, man and his son out just enjoying their walk. All of a sudden, within 15 feet of them, this huge creature just walks out of the cedars. He said it was about, I think he said 8 feet tall, but his description of the hair was very interesting. He said it was at least 12 inches long all over this creature. It was matted, but he said the creature stopped and turned and looked at him and his son. And he said his son and him were just frozen. They were terrified. They couldn't move. Now, here is something. When he told me this, I just thought this was the most fascinating thing. The creature turned and looked at them. It then walked backwards into the cedars and disappeared, gone. He said it never took its eyes off of them and just walked backwards. And he said he grabbed his son and went just as hard as he could go away from there. But he said it's something that just changes your life to have an encounter like that. And I can see why.
No, no doubt. We're going to take another break here real quick, and then we'll come back and wrap up with you. Our guest this evening in the Darkness Radio show is Philip Spencer. He's the author of the book and DVD, The Wild Men of Kentucky, The Mystery of Panther Rock. We'll talk a little bit more about that. And stay tuned, because at the 11 o'clock hour, we're going to be joined by, and I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Gian Temporelli, who is the co-author of Heaven, Can You Hear Me?, a autobiographical account of the life and career of one of the most world-famous psychics and paranormal researchers, Peter James. We're going to also hear some of the words right from Peter's mouth. So we've got a great show for you lined up this evening. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more Philip Spencer and the Wild Men of Kentucky, The Mystery of Panther Rock, right after this. Good evening. Welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Check out our website, darknessradio.com. You can check out all of the cool news stories that we talk about and movie and book reviews right on our site. You can also give it advice to our newscasters, to our book and movie critics by going there. Click on their names and links, and you'll be able to recommend books and movies that you think they should read and watch for upcoming episodes of our show. You can also talk to international news correspondent Adrian Lee. They're sending him on some cool news stories from around the world. You can send local news stories here in the United States to Bree Sanders on our website at the news desk as well. And as a quick update, just to remind you, we will not be on the air tomorrow night. Tim, can you believe it? We're not going to be on the air.
I know. Hey, wait, you know what? What's going to be on in our stead?
What? The guys from the Ricola commercials?
Yeah, those guys too.
No, the Vikings are going to be playing tomorrow night. Minnesota Vikings. So, unfortunately, our worldwide audience has to take a backseat to really horrible Minnesota football. That's right. There's the sound we're used to hearing. Excellent. We won't be on tomorrow night, so you guys have a night off. Go out. Have some fun. Spend some time. Take your beautiful spouse out to go see My Name is Bruce. How about that?
There you go.
All right. Good deal. Right now, though, we're going to go
back. Sorry, I'm excited.
Yes, you are. We're going to go back to our guest for the evening, Philip Spencer, author of the book and DVD, The Wild Men of Kentucky, The Mystery of Panther Rock. What can you tell us? The cave Panther Rock, can you describe us this cave and tell us what the stories are that revolve around it and what is the mystery?
Well, the cave... It's not a large cave. It's in an unusual area. Now, Kentucky has a lot of limestone. There are a lot of caves. But this cave goes back so many years with strange stories about it. And in the area that surrounds it that I refer to as the Fraser Land, over the years, these stories just kept accumulating. Strange animals, lights. I had two events at the cave myself. Where this one night while camping there at about 3 in the morning, suddenly I was being beaten on the back by a friend yelling, actually was screaming, look, look, look. I rolled over and looked, and the most, just this unusual bluish-white light was coming up from where the cave was below us, about 100 feet, and shooting up in the air. And there was four of us there, and we were all just, like, frozen where we were looking at this.
I'm glad you took the story there because, you know, talking about being in Kentucky and you got a guy beating you on the back, I was afraid the next thing you were going to say was squeal like a pig.
Well, I didn't really know what to do when I came up and saw this. It was just, and then it just went off like somebody had hit a wall switch.
Wow, so it just kind of... Now, explain the bluish light, the blue-white light to me. Did it look like just a light source? Did it look like a creature?
No, this was a light source, but it had this unusual bluish-whitish hue to it. And it had a beam structure almost, but it was huge. And I even got up and went down to where near the cave entrance down below. There was nothing. There's no place down there for somebody to run. There was not a sound, but I did notice that the woods were very quiet. There was not a sound, and that was somewhat unusual, but there have been reports over the years of people seeing lights back there, strange lights, and apparently the four of us witnessed those lights very up close and personal.
All right, and this is part of the experience that you investigate in this book and in this DVD, The Wild Man of Kentucky, The Mystery of Panther Rock.
Yes. Also, I saw a form. I don't know what it was. It was moving against a tree line one night camping back at Panther Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And the dog that was with us, which was with us all the time, this dog saw this form also. It was like a shadow, but it moved fluidly against the tree line, the embers of the campfire. The dog saw it first, and then I saw it. And when we were filming the documentary, we had Philip Gardner, a best-selling author. He's also a skeptic about all this.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time in his life, something happened to him out where we were. He saw this form come out of a tree line. It looked like a shadow creature or something. Hesitate a moment and go back in. He had never, ever had anything happen to him. And he just did not know what to think of it. He just could not wrap his mind around the fact that he saw what he saw. And then once I told him, well, that sounds exactly like what I saw over 25 years ago, but over at the cave. So what is this form? And others in this area around the cave, they talk like hunters, talk about hearing something in the trees.
Mm-hmm.
It moves in a fluid motion. It confuses people as to what could it be moving like that. And like I say, we have lights. We've got UFO reports. We've got ghosts. We've got Bigfoot. There was a couple who had a 700-pound cow come busting through a gate. I actually went and spoke with these people, real down-to-earth, good farm people. The cow's right eye had been ripped out. Its ears were torn off down to the bone.
Hmm.
And this was within a mile or two of the cave of Panther Rock. Once again, what's
going
on?
Well, now, why do they refer to it as Panther Rock? Are there panthers in that area? Could that be what's mauling these creatures?
Years ago, that a Native American was killed by a panther at the top of the cave. There's a ledge and then a path that goes down to the cave. And the story was that a panther killed a Native American chief up at the top of that, where the cave is. And that's how it got the name Panther Rock.
All right. We've got about a minute left on the show. What would you like to leave people with this evening as they go away from this? What do you think is going on out there? Are there really Bigfoot? Are there creatures like this that we just haven't discovered yet?
Yeah, I am one who's seen it. I am far past, you know, is it real? I totally understand why people doubt this. There's no evidence. There's no carcass. There's nothing. But you have thousands upon thousands of people, just like the people you'll hear on the DVD and read about in the book, that are as credible as it can be. You have many academics involved in this. This is a great mystery. And with the book and DVD, you get to hear firsthand people talking about how this affects their lives. And I hope everyone will be open-minded and just sincerely think about this. And it's a great mystery. Why not try to solve all this?
I'm with you. And again, the name of the book and the DVD is The Wild Man of Kentucky, The Mystery of Panther Rock. You can get the information by going to philipspencer.net. That's philipspencer.net. You can hear that howl that was on the website. You can see some of the movie trailer there for the DVD. You can get the information. Can they contact you there? Can they order autographed copies as well, Philip?
I haven't started the autographed copies yet, but that's something we're looking at.
Okay.
But I do have a contact email on my page. They can just send me an email, and I've really got some good information from that so far.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Philip. Much continued success. Let us know what goes on as you do more research in these fields, all right?
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. And hey, thank you all for tuning in to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. We're going to be back talking about probably one of the most world-famous psychics and paranormal researchers, Peter James. We're going to be speaking with Gian Temporelli, who is co-author of a book about Peter James that Peter was in the midst of writing before he passed away. You'll get to hear more about that, and you'll get to hear from the man himself, Peter James, with some audio that we have. You're listening to the best of Paranormal Talk Radio. We're here with you every Saturday and Sunday night from 9 to midnight.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Big color, bigger savings. Sherwin-Williams Super Sale is here. Get 40% off paints and stains June 5th through the 11th with prices starting at $30.89. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.